You're listening to Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm your guest host today, Joanne Rideout. And I'm here in the studio with Linda Kozlowski. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Joanne.
Thank you so much for being here. We're going to be talking about emergency preparedness. So for people who maybe don't live on the coast, we had quite an emergency event recently here, a tornado on the coast in Oregon that hit the community of Manzanita. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about an incredible emergency response group that is in the Manzanita area, been around for a number of years. They do a terrific job, and they were the folks who were out on the street within minutes taking care of the community of Manzanita and helping them get back on their feet. And Linda is with that group, and I wanted to talk with her today about how do you become the best prepared emergency group around, which is what you are. So, Linda, tell us a little bit about, tell us the name of the group, first of all.
The name of the group is the Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay.
Okay, and you're based in Manzanita.
Actually, we have an office in the Nehalem Bay Fire and Rescue Station,
okay,
which is between Nehalem and Manzanita.
Okay, now you are the leader of this group. You're the president of it. Can you tell me just a little bit about yourself and how you came to live in Manzanita? Are you from Manzanita originally?
No, actually, I'm not. I moved to Manzanita in about 2004, but we had a vacation place in Manzanita since 1973. I had a professional career. I owned a company and worked in Portland. I was beginning to do a lot of consulting work, and some of that consulting work could be done on the phone. So I was able to actually physically move here in 2004. Part of what I did in my company is I was an executive search consultant. And the reason that that's important is I think as you work with volunteers, it is absolutely critical to find the passion of a volunteer and connect it to a responsibility or a duty. And we just have an incredible community in Manzanita that is really willing to step up. And it really helps if you can kind of marry those two kind of characteristics. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that in Manzanita.
So now you have this group of volunteers who have trained extensively in emergency response. How did the group get started? That's about 8 years ago, you said, right?
Right. Earlier. Well, actually, it was in December of 2007, or the instigating event was in 2007. And we had a disaster much like the tornado. Our then fire chief, police chief in Manzanita was in our emergency operations center for 36 hours straight with almost no help. And a block away, there were people that were just trying to help and had no way. They just didn't know how to do that. So in early 2008, we brought together a community meeting, and the community meeting included all of North Tillamook County. So that would be Wheeler, Nehalem, and Manzanita. And it was probably the first time that the three communities had really gotten together to focus on an issue. And we really weren't sure what was going to happen. But we had a really large turnout. The representation was significant from all three communities. And we brought to them at that point a program that we called Map Your Neighborhood. And Map Your Neighborhood is a program that kind of pushes preparedness down to a community neighborhood level. And we felt that was a really good way to start. And it's turned out to be a foundation of everything we do.
Really? Okay.
So that was the beginning. Since that time, we began to add additional kinds of programs to that. So we added a ham radio or emergency communication program. We became involved with community emergency response teams. That's a FEMA program that helps individuals at our level learn to do search and rescue, basic disaster first aid. It teaches you a lot of skills, and those skills are very useful in any kind of disaster, and they're very empowering. I mean, it's a really great course. Then we began, at the same time, the Medical Reserve Corps was started, and the Medical Reserve Corps essentially are, again, a FEMA-supported program, are doctors and nurses, pharmacists, psychologists that all get together. Most are retired. They're not all retired, but they work together and they train together. And the issue with the Medical Reserve Corps is they become surge support for any of the clinics. And they train in wilderness medicine because if you're a doctor, you know, you're used to a pristine environment. And as anybody recognizes, in a disaster, it's not a pristine environment.
Right.
So there's a lot of training that goes on with that. And we've got a really strong partnership with Adventist Hospital System and with Reinhardt Clinic in our area. So all those and the other organization we work really closely with is the Red Cross in terms of shelters and training for our volunteers. And so in the latter part of 2008, we began to realize that we had a lot of people that were both crossover. Some were Red Cross, some were CERT, some were both. And that in order to be effective in terms of our response, there needed to be synergy between the group. So we formed an organization that we called the Emergency Volunteer Corps. And on the board of the Emergency Volunteer Corps are representatives of each of those organizations. So as we move forward, we talk together, we plan together, we drill together so that we respond as a unit together. And that's probably been one of the most effective decisions we've made along the line. So we were up and running at mid to end of 2008, and we have grown steadily over the years. And part of it is that you learn from your mistakes. So, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes, and we've learned some really good lessons. So I think we've come a long way. But it has been 8 years of hard work, lots of training, a real commitment of the community to develop a culture of preparedness, and it really paid off during the tornado.
Well, that whole concept of a culture of preparedness, what a great phrase that is. I mean, because that's really what it takes.
Absolutely.
You know, when you were talking about finding the passion of the volunteer, you know, how do you build that buy-in from the community? How do you get people to show up all the time?
Well, that's the trick, and it's different in every community. Mm. And I think we are blessed to be in a community of people that are really willing and interested in stepping up, and that's really true in our three cities. Just as an example, there are two individuals that live in, as it happens to be men, that live in Manzanita. Bruce Maxwell and Bill Peake, and they're both extraordinarily skilled in technology. And so they've been a real force for our ham radio operators. And so they've helped people get trained, so they've helped with the training. They've helped with, you know, once you have a ham license, how do you really use this ham, because it's pretty
right.
overwhelming at
right.
first. And then they have actually programmed all of our ham radios. Well, that's hugely important because it allows a much broader audience to have an effective communication tool during an emergency, and they love it. I mean, if they could, my guess is they'd do that 24 hours a day. So that's a real skill and a match for them.
Wow, that is a great match.
Another example, we have a couple, Bill and Karen Harshberger. They have been instrumental in the growth of our community emergency response teams. So initially when we looked at the CERTs, we call them CERTs, when we looked at the CERTs, we are an aging demographic. So a lot of our community is retired.
A lot of the coast is, I think.
I think a lot of
yeah.
the coast is.
Yeah.
And so we looked at these CERT teams and we thought, there's no way we can do that. Well, that's really not the case. The CERT training is extraordinarily helpful, and it allows you to perform at whatever energy level, skill level you have. So it's really a good course. And Bill's background had been in emergency preparedness for a large company.
Oh, okay.
And Karen is just an amazing person. So together, they have continued the training of CERTs. Now we have over 60 CERTs.
Mm.
And we do bi-monthly training, which is really critical because it keeps your skills
okay.
up.
Okay, renewing training.
It keeps people highly interested in the program.
Yeah.
And Bill and Karen Harshberger have just done an incredible job. And you can tell, they love doing it. It is really their passion. So we've been very lucky to have people in our community who have that level of interest.
I've been through the CERT training, and just in case people who are listening don't know what that's about, it's a series of classes, and at each one, it's focused on, say, fire suppression or handling a person that you find who's injured, or it's just basic first aid and things like, you know, I used a fire extinguisher to put out a fire. I mean, right. Who knew how to put out a fire? I mean, what do you do if you go into a building and there's a person lying under rubble? What's the best way to approach a situation like that? And it's fascinating. You meet a lot of interesting people and you learn things that would be just very, very helpful.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's a great investment if you're interested in, anyone is interested in emergency preparedness. It just gives you the sense that if something happened, you might know what to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's a great thing. Manzanita sounds like kind of an extraordinary community. Would you say that the average person, how well prepared is the average person in Manzanita because of all the work that you've done there?
That is an extraordinarily important question. And so in early 2015, we kind of looked at ourselves and we felt like we were probably a mile wide and a quarter inch deep, that we were just doing a lot of projects, and sometimes we'd start a project and it would not develop into anything. And so there were a lot of kind of dead end streets we were going down, and we were really exhausting our volunteers, and that was clearly not a good thing. So another great example of a wonderful volunteer, we have a woman that lives in Wheeler. Her name is Betsy Chase, and Betsy has extraordinary background in strategic planning, and she comes out of education.
Wow.
So she led us, that really gives me goosebumps. So she led us through a strategic planning session in early 2015. And what we wanted to do out of that, the question came, how prepared are we really? And we wanted to find out in 2015, we wanted to answer that question. And we had no statistics, we had no data, and we felt that data was becoming really important, that we needed to quantify what we were doing. So Betsy actually put together a team, again, absolutely amazing team, that put together a survey that we took to the community, and we got close to, I believe it was over 400 responses, equal to 20% of the community, which if you do surveys is pretty impressive. And it was a self-evaluation of how prepared do you think you are. And we got some fairly disturbing news. 14% of our community feels that they are highly prepared. Now, that's after 8 years of hard work, so we were a little disappointed in that. About 60% feel that they're moderately prepared, and that was good. I mean, we were really pleased. We had, you know, when you look at that, that's 74% have been involved with some kind of preparedness and some kind of training. So we felt that was okay, but not as good as we'd expected. So in order to respond to that in our strategic plan in 2016, we have put together several programs that are focused on driving our trainings down to the neighborhoods. So we're doing things like Go Coffees, which are go bag coffees, where we go out into the neighborhood.
Oh.
We bring hard to purchase supplies. So we bring supplies. We bring a ready-made go bag that they can purchase at cost. We bring a partially stocked go bag that if they have a lot of stuff they already have. So we're really working on getting everybody in 2017 to at least 35% of our community have a go bag.
Wow, that's
so
pretty
good.
So
we're really pleased with that community. The last program that we're taking out is a program that is our kind of our yellow radio program. Our yellow radios are inexpensive, thanks to Bruce and Bill, are inexpensive radios that are both ham and essentially walkie-talkie.
Wow.
And only they're much stronger than a walkie-talkie. So they're programmed for both ham and for GMRS, which are the stations that walkie-talkie's on.
Hmm.
If you are not a ham person, you can listen to ham radio, but you can't transmit on it. But you can transmit on any of the FRS or walkie-talkie stations. And in our emergency, in our tornado, that is how we communicated throughout the community with
our yellow radios. That's really
an extraordinary program, and it is the radio itself is far less expensive than what a normal ham radio would cost.
You're based in the firehouse there. How did that partnership come about so that, they let you have a, kind of a headquarters there in the firehouse?
Well, actually, it's timing and the fact that we have an extraordinary fire chief.
Mm.
So Perry Sherbaugh actually was one of the people that encouraged the Emergency Volunteer Corps to happen. He's been in 2007, he was both fire chief and police chief. And he ran essentially a volunteer fire department, and it was very clear to him that he needed more access to more volunteers, more trained volunteers, and that would allow his fire volunteers to really focus on the response of a fire. And there are lots of things that are subsidiary responsibilities that happen during a fire or an emergency,
right, absolutely,
that trained volunteers like us could handle. And allowing this absolutely worked in this tornado, and when we get to that, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And so he was encouraging of that. At the same time, we at that point had five different rural fire departments. And if you know anything about fire departments, you understand that fire equipment, fire engines are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And to have five separate organizations was just, it was just splitting the pie way too thin. So I believe it was in 2008. We asked our community to pass a tax that would fund a new fire station that would bring all of these rural fire stations together and put that into one. So that was the creation of the fire station. So as they were planning the fire station, Perry reached out to us and said, "We'd like to have you be part of this. So we will create a space for you, an office for you, right next to the Emergency Operations Center, so that we can be coordinating during an emergency, and you can use that as kind of an ongoing location for your office." And it has just worked out incredibly well. And again, is exactly where we needed to be during the tornado.
Well, I'm just going to take a minute and remind everybody that you're listening to Coast Community Radio. This is Perspectives. I'm Joanne Rideout, your guest host, and I'm here with Linda Kozlowski. She is the president of the Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay. We're talking about their group, which is incredibly prepared for emergencies. And what caused me to invite her here was that tornado that happened in Manzanita. So why don't we talk a little bit about that, Linda? Well, let's just start at, where were you when this happened? I can't even imagine what that was like.
I look back, it is kind of entertaining now. It really wasn't at the time. So we get up fairly early and walk our dogs in the Nehalem Bay State Park. And we just started our walk, and a ranger came up to us, ran up to us and said, "There's a tornado warning." And my husband and I looked at each other, and we actually laughed. No tornado ever comes to the coast. Maybe tsunami, maybe, but not a tornado. And so we walked on, and then all of a sudden we got to thinking, well, maybe we ought to start thinking about going back. Probably something I should do. So we got back in the car. And as we're heading back toward Manzanita, the Nehalem Bay State Park is south of Manzanita. As we were heading north back to Manzanita, we actually saw the tornado go through downtown Manzanita. Had we been there any earlier, we would have been in the midst of that tornado.
Oh,
so we felt again blessed, and the tornado was very limited. There were a lot of, if you can call them, good things that came out of the tornado. It had a limited path. 128 homes were affected. Five were damaged totally. We had a third of our trees were destroyed.
Oh my gosh!
And of course, the trees are a mainstay. But it was right along maybe two streets, and actually not the main street, but to the north. And you walk down those streets today, and it's just, it is just unbelievable. You see sky, you see the ocean, but you don't see trees. And it really feels weird. It really feels weird. The other blessing, there are school kids that wait out in front of Moxie's, which is the building that was totally damaged, very badly damaged, and really in the eye of the storm. And they would have been there at about 8:30 on Friday waiting for a school bus. And luckily, school had an in-service day, so they were at home.
Boy, that is amazing.
It is just amazing. And the fact that no one was actually injured is just absolutely amazing. Lots of property damage, but you can build back in property damage. Lives are critical. And
oh,
we
absolutely. Now, I remember talking to Pat Corcoran, as we talked a little bit about before the show, who drove by right after the tornado happened and saw your volunteers out on the street in yellow vests within minutes of this thing, directing traffic. How did you mobilize that response?
Well,
that's amazing.
We drilled a lot on that. So, and I have to say, we've trained for a lot of things we have not trained for a tornado.
Well, who knew? You know, it's a real who knew kind of situation.
And you know, one of the questions that came up, and we're going to be working more on this is, you know, where do you go in a tornado? I mean, we just aren't used to that. So what's the safest place in the house? Certainly you don't want to be outside. So we're going to be talking a lot about that. But the first mobilization was of our community emergency response teams, the CERTs. Those are the people that will back up any responder. So let me take a step back, because I think it's important to kind of understand the process here. So initially, the first person that was aware that anything was happening was Manzanita's Public Works. And he was talking to one of our people over yellow radio who was actually on the beach. Her name is Paula Peig.
Oh, and Paula. Oh, my gosh.
Paula actually saw this what she called a water... What is it, a water spout?
Water spout, yeah.
Yeah. And so we didn't know at that point it was a tornado, but she actually saw that and was communicating with Dan.
Wow.
Because he had no idea what was happening. I mean, just no idea. So then Dan called 911 and asked 911 to have PUD, our electricity, cut off to Manzanita, which we needed to do because, you know, poles were down. I mean, it was really dangerous. So he just made some really extraordinary decisions. He deployed, because he knew how to do that, the fire, EMS, CERTs, and the police. So over the next probably 15 minutes, we set up an instant command post.
Oh, yeah,
and
okay.
And that instant command post, Jesse Walsh was our instant commander. Jesse, our fire chief, police chief, was out of the city, so he was quite a ways away. So Jesse was our duty officer, so he set up the instant command post at our post office. We ultimately had a joint command, which included fire, it included police, and included EMS and CERT. So we were all working together.
So that close partnership between the citizens and the first responders,
absolutely,
the professional first
responders.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
You know, not one of us could have handled that on our own. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just was too much. So the first thing the fire responders did is that they went on to every house to find out if there was anybody injured. So they did a search and rescue throughout the damaged area. What they found is that there were people that were stuck in their homes, but there was nobody hurt. Mm. So they told them to shelter in place until they could get back to them. So that was our first sense of a damage assessment. So we had a sense then of how many houses were damaged. At the same time, because it was sudden and quick, we had two things occurring. We had PUD there almost immediately. They did an incredible job. They worked really closely with our public works. But we had a lot of people coming down just to see what had happened. And the trouble with people coming down to see what has happened is that they are in huge danger, because you have no idea the stability of the buildings. There were damaged trees that we ultimately had to take down because they would have fallen down.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Part of our responsibility then was to keep people out of the danger zone. So we did a lot of work around monitoring the streets, making sure people didn't get into the areas that they shouldn't have, and then making sure that the right people got where they needed to go. So I think we were on scene. I was on scene almost immediately, and we text message to deploy our CERTs. We had immediately immediately. Within 30 minutes, we had 35 certs.
Wow.
That were in the staging area and were deployed almost immediately.
That is really something.
It really is. I mean, I just am in awe of what this community did. And then to add to that, which was even more impressive, is the phone was ringing off the hook of people who wanted to help. Who didn't, you know, what can I do? Where can I go? So we had lots of lessons learned, but one of the lessons learned is we asked those people to stay at home. I think the next time what we would do is ask them to go to a staging area, and because we could have used some additional help. We'd ask them to go to kind of where spontaneous volunteers go. We'd track their skills and then make sure they were with somebody that was trained when we needed to deploy them. So, We were active through, I think it was about 3 p.m., and then things began to slow down. We had also opened what we call a community shelter in Calvary Bible Church, which is kind of in that area in Manzanita. We opened that because we weren't sure where people would... We wanted a place for people to go away from the staging area that had lost their homes or that were frightened or that just kind of needed a warm place and a cup of coffee and a snack. And again, we have a great team that sets that up. And then we worked with the Red Cross because we were expecting a huge windstorm the next day. A lot of the
That's
media
right.
was actually
That's
here
right. yeah.
in preparation for this huge windstorm,
right.
which turned out not to be anything. But we put a shelter, working with the Red Cross, we put a shelter on standby so that if something had happened on Saturday, we could have immediately gone to shelter mode and been able to house people if necessary.
What advice would you give to other communities? Because I know you're doing a lot of outreach with your group to try and engage other communities. What advice would you give to other communities who want to increase their resilience and start a group like yours? What do you tell people when you advise them?
We have expanded our outreach to all of Tillamook County, and what we do in is called the Tillamook County Citizens Corps. And what we do is we work together on issues that surface, brainstorming, benchmarking, talking about best practices. We bring people in to speak to us. What I found is there are a couple of things you need for something like this. You need a threat. There needs to be something that the community is concerned about, because unless you can get them focused on that concern, and for us it was the tsunami, that was our initial concern. Secondly, you need some fairly committed organizers. It can be one, two, or three, but people that are passionate about that. There needs to be a small cadre of that. Thirdly, you need funding. You need some kind of access to funding so that you can support your activities. It doesn't have to be a lot, but some kind of funding mechanism. And that's really important as you begin. Ultimately, if you get started, which then it moves to sustainability, and that's where we are right now. I think we've got a great organization. We are willing to talk to anybody. If somebody's interested in starting an organization like this, we'll be there for you because we think it's that important. But it takes that kind of long-term commitment and stability to have the kind of response that we've had in Manzanita.
So if people wanted to get in touch with your group, what are the best ways for them to do that? I know you have a website. Let's start with that.
Well, we have an excellent website. It's EVCNB, which is Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay. EV as in Victor, CNB.org. And that has some excellent information on it. We have board meetings on the fourth Monday of every month at 3 p.m. at a fire station, and it's open to the public. Actually, we won't have one until after the first of the year now, but the next meeting will be in January. We are more than willing, if you have a specific question, to give us a call or to email me, and probably the easiest way is president@evcnb.org.
Okay.
And if I'm not the person to answer it, I'll make sure it's targeted to the right person. But our commitment, our strong mission, is to really focus on to teach and encourage personal preparedness, not only for our own community, but for anybody that's willing to listen, because we really believe it's that important.
Well, thank you so much. I think we're just about out of time. You've been listening to Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joanne Rideout, your guest host this week. We've been talking with Linda Kozlowski. She is the president of the Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nehalem Bay, an incredibly prepared group of emergency responders, all volunteers, and they did an incredible job of responding to, oh my God, a tornado in Manzanita. So thank you so much, Linda, for being here.
Oh, it's delightful. Thanks, Joanne.